The reading is from Acts chapter 18, verses 1 to 28, and can be found on page 1114. After this, Paul left Athens and went to Corinth. There he met a Jew named Aquila, a native of Pontus, who had recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because Claudius had ordered all Jews to leave Rome. Paul went to see them, and because he was a tent maker as they were, he stayed and worked with them. Every Sabbath he reasoned in the synagogue, trying to persuade Jews and Greeks. When Silas and Timothy came from Macedonia, Paul devoted himself exclusively to preaching, testifying to the Jews that Jesus was the Messiah.
But when they opposed Paul and became abusive, he shook out his clothes in protest and said to them, "Your blood be on your own heads. I am innocent of it. From now on I will go to the Gentiles." Then Paul left the synagogue and went next door to the house of Titius Justus, a worshipper of God. Crispus, the synagogue leader, and his entire household believed in the Lord, and many of the Corinthians who heard Paul believed and were baptized. One night the Lord spoke to Paul in a vision. "Do not be afraid. Keep on speaking. Do not be silent. For I am with you, and no one is going to attack and harm you, because I have many people in this city." So Paul stayed in Corinth for a year and a half, teaching them the word of God. While Gallio was proconsul of Achaia, the Jews of Corinth made a united attack on Paul and brought him to the palace of judgment. "This man," they charged, "is persuading the people to worship God in ways contrary to the law." Just as Paul was about to speak, Gallio said to them, "If you Jews were making a complaint about some misdemeanor or serious crime, it would be reasonable for me to listen to you. But since it involves questions about words and names and your own law, settle the matter yourselves. I will not be a judge of such things." So he drove them off. Then the crowd returned on Sosthenes, the synagogue leader, and beat him in front of the proconsul. And Gallio showed no concern whatsoever. Paul stayed on in Corinth for some time. Then he left the brothers and sisters and sailed for Syria, accompanied by Priscilla and Aquila. Before he sailed, he had his hair cut off in Centuria because of a vow he had taken. They arrived at Ephesus, where Paul left Priscilla and Aquila. He himself went into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. When they asked him to spend more time with them, he declined. But as he left, he promised, "I will come back if it's God's will." Then he set sail from Ephesus. When he landed at Caesarea, he went up to Jerusalem and greeted the church, and then went down to Antioch. After spending some time in Antioch, Paul set out from there and travelled from place to place throughout the region of Galatia and Phrygia, strengthening all the disciples. Meanwhile, a Jew named Apollos, a native of Alexandria, came to Ephesus. He was a learned man with a thorough knowledge of the scriptures. He had been instructed in the way of the Lord, and he spoke with great fervour and taught about Jesus accurately, though he knew only the baptism of John. He began to speak boldly in the synagogue. When Priscilla and Aquila heard him, they invited him to their home and explained to him the way of God more adequately. When Apollos wanted to go on to Achaia, the brothers and sisters encouraged him and wrote to the disciples there to welcome him. When he arrived, he was a great help to those who, by grace, had believed, for he vigorously refuted his Jewish opponents in public debate, proving from the scriptures that Jesus was the Messiah.
This is the word of the Lord. Thank you, Nick. So we're thinking together today about discouragement. And just as we kick off, I wonder, just cast your mind back to the last time you were really discouraged. Okay, what was it about? How did it feel? What did it lead to? Now, for those of us following Jesus, discouragement can be, well, it can feel
like a pretty constant battle. We've been seeing in Acts, haven't we, that God calls us onto his team. He says, I've got brilliant news. It's like a seed. And your job, go out and scatter. And not all of us are the Apostle Paul. But all of us do have our own little niche, whether it's in our family or at our school or in our street or with a small group of friends. God has put all of us somewhere to scatter seed for him. And sometimes we feel excited about it. And we think, yes, I want to live a fruitful life for Jesus. But then when you get to it, it can feel so hard. In the workplace, you're thinking, yes, I'm an ambassador for Christ here. And so there you are at the post-work drinks, and you're praying, and then an opportunity comes up, and you talk a bit about Jesus, and it's just like awkward. And it doesn't go anywhere. And you just leave feeling discouraged. Not going to do that again. Or maybe you're at home with the kids and you're just wanting to keep sowing the seed with your own kids, read the Bible, pray with them, but then your 8-year-old is just totally disengaged at the moment. And you think, am I just a terrible parent? I'm doing my best, but you just feel discouraged. Or you're inviting friends to church, and you genuinely think they'd love it. And they say, we'll come. And they're polite, but then they never quite get around to it. And it's always the same on at 3:45 on a Sunday afternoon. There's the WhatsApp message. And you know what it's like when you see it arrive? The feeling. You're like, oh, it's discouragement. Deflated. And maybe like in the early days of being a Christian, or maybe the early days of coming along to church, you felt so motivated, excited about Jesus, but over time, you know, it's just, you get a bit worn down by discouragement as you discover that working in the harvest field with Jesus is harder, slower, costlier than perhaps you'd imagined. I mean, just talking personally, I can think of times, even in the last few years, where I've wept in discouragement. An email comes in, you hear a bit of news, something's going on in one of the lives of our church family, an opportunity falls through. Oh, it can be so hard. So many things can lead us to feeling deeply discouraged. There can be opposition to Jesus. Sometimes worse than that, apathy. These people just don't care. Or just the relentless pressures of life and the feeling that I just am struggling to hold it all together. And discouragement, I think, when it goes unchecked in our hearts, probably is the one thing that is most likely to lead us to checkout. Okay, do you know what I mean by that? There's the total checkout. I'm done with church. I'm done with Jesus. I'm done. You'll have friends, I'm sure, for whom that's been the case. Just relentless discouragement. I'm done. Total checkout. There's the gradual checkout. Okay, and it's not as kind of clear cut and final as the kind of the total checkout, but the gradual checkout is just, I go from being kind of excited, motivated, fully engaged, coming to church every week, praying, and just gradually over time, I just become less involved with Jesus, with church, with my faith, and it's discouragement.
I just feel discouraged, and it leads to this kind of gradual checkout. And then there's the heart checkout. And I just wonder if this is the most common of all. You're here every week. You go through the routines of following Jesus, but your heart's not in it anymore. There have been too many knocks, too much discouragement. And so my heart, that used to be so engaged with Jesus, now just re-engages with other things. My career, or my home improvements, or the next holiday, or my kids' success, or whatever. But my heart's not with Jesus anymore. That's what discouragement does, doesn't it? That's why it's so important to talk about it. That's why there's so much in the Bible helping us to address it. Jesus, I think, knew that this would be number one temptation for anyone who seriously wants to get involved in working with him in this world. Number one temptation is discouragement. That's why he told us the parable of the sower. We had it a few weeks ago. Do you remember the farmer? He sows the seed. That's the person just spreading the good news. And what happens to the majority of the seed, says Jesus? Doesn't come to fruition, doesn't seem to do anything. And Jesus says, hang on in there, the harvest is coming. That's the message of the parable of the sower. And the book of Acts, as we've seen, is we are seeing Paul, the sower, and he is like the parable of the sower, kind of in action. And he's traveling around the Mediterranean, he's sowing the seed. And for Paul, it's a mixed bag. I mean, yes, there's some fruit, there are churches planted, there are individuals built up and encouraged, but there's a lot of wasted seed, a lot of apparently wasted effort, a lot of opposition. In Thessalonica, we saw a few weeks ago, there's a mob, he has to flee. He goes to Berea, it's encouraging, but then he has to flee there because the mob follows him. Then he goes to Athens, and he does a great job, but it's a pretty cool reception. And so he moves on to Corinth, and we've just read here of him now being chucked out of the synagogue by the abusive behaviour of those who are so opposed to him and the message. I mean, he's a human being. We sometimes read of Paul as if he's like a superhuman, but he's got a fragile heart like the rest of us. What does that do to a person? And there are two things that Paul somehow has to fit together. Over here, he knows. He knows that he knows that he knows that Jesus is risen, that he's alive, that the good news is real, that he has been commissioned and called to this particular job. He knows that. That's over here, but over here, he's thinking, why is it so hard? Given that this is the case, why is my experience just so much opposition? So many kind of cool, indifferent customers? Don't we wrestle with the same thing? We know that Jesus is alive. We've experienced his power in our own lives. Sure, we have our moments of doubt, but basically we know that. And then we think, yeah, but why is it so hard? Why is there so much discouragement as I follow him? Now, I don't know if Paul was on the verge of kind of checking out. But in this passage, we're actually going to just look at a couple of verses in this reading together. And we're going to look at a couple of verses where Jesus speaks a word into Paul's discouragement. And you know, I've been praying this week that Jesus would speak this word into each of our own discouragements as well. And I don't know, maybe you have checked out. Maybe you're the gradual checkout. Maybe you're the heart checkout. Maybe you're on the verge of the total checkout. But maybe Jesus might just use this word, as he did for Paul, to help you to keep going as well today. So let's have a look at it together. It's verses 9 to 10, page 1114, if you've closed your Bible. Okay, one night the Lord spoke to Paul in a vision. Do not be afraid. Keep on speaking. Do not be silent, for I am with you. And no one is going to attack and harm you because I have many people in this city. That's the word. Isn't it a wonderful word? I have many people in this city. And do you see the effect straight away? Verse 11. So Paul stayed in Corinth for a year and a half, teaching them the word of God. Do you see, when we let Jesus speak into our discouragements, do you see what the effect is? It enables us to keep going for him, with him. So what is this word then, and how can it speak to us as well? Well, three, and we're going to rattle through these, three crucial things that Jesus reminds Paul about what he's doing. Okay? And here's the first. He says, it's my work. Remember, Paul, it's my work. It's a lovely phrase, isn't it, there in verse 10. I have many people in this city. I've got many people in this city. He doesn't say, oh, Paul, keep going. You're going to have great success in this city. Instead, he says, I have many people in this city. Do you see the difference? The most important thing that Jesus wants Paul to remember, Paul, it's not your work. It's my work. It's my kingdom. It's my blood shed on the cross that has secured redemption. I am now alive. I'm risen. I'm actually here. By my Spirit, I'm doing the work, opening people's hearts, growing the church, building my kingdom. I've got a plan. It's my work. And you know, I've got people in this city. Right at the start of Acts, verse 1, we read in his first book, the book of Luke, he says, in my former book, Theophilus, I wrote about all that Jesus began to do and teach. It's a telling word, isn't it? All he began
to do and teach.
The implication is the book of Acts is what he's continuing to do. It's my work, says Jesus. Now, Corinth is a city of 200,000 people. It was the Las Vegas of its day. Like, reputed for its kind of debauchery and depravity. That's Corinth. And you can imagine Paul feeling totally overwhelmed as he steps into this heaving kind of mass of people. Totally overwhelming. But you see, Jesus says, it's not overwhelming to me. Okay, I've got this. You just keep witnessing and leave the rest to me. Okay, it's my work. Now, I think we are especially likely to give way to discouragement when we forget this. When we start thinking, what I'm doing for Jesus is kind of all down to me. I think when we think it's all down to us, on the one or two days that we feel like we're nailing it for Jesus, we feel proud. And on every other day where we feel like dismal failures for Jesus, we feel utterly despairing. And Jesus, if that's you, Jesus says, remember, brother, sister, my dear friend, my child, it is my work, not yours. Okay, if you're laboring for Jesus and feeling discouraged, Jesus says to you, it's my work. I have people here in Henley, that little niche that I've called you into as my witness, I've got people there as well. So you do your job. Keep witnessing, I'll do mine. Leave the rest to me. Remember, it's my work. Secondly, my work in my way. That's the second thing that we see. My work in my way. Do you see what he says, verse 9? He says, do not be afraid. Keep on speaking. Do not be silent. Do you see, Jesus is not only reminding Paul that it's his work, he's reminding of him the way that he's going to accomplish his work. Do not be silent, keep on speaking. Okay, that's the way. 2,000 years later, nothing has changed. The way Jesus does his work is through the speaking of his message. It's as simple as that. So he says, do not be silent, keep on speaking. Now, here's the thing that discouragement does. It kind of puts a gag on us, doesn't it? We think, well, goodness me, like after that experience, I'm not opening my mouth again. It silences us. And so, Jesus reminds Paul, it's my work in my way.
My way is just to keep speaking the message. That's why it's so important that we get the message right. And so later in Acts 18, we see Priscilla and Aquila correcting Apollos because he's got a few things wrong. Okay, it's so important that we're diligent about understanding the message so that we can speak it correctly. So important that we don't change the message to make it more appealing to contemporary ears, because Jesus says, I do my work in my way, which is to pass on my message, not a message that you've made up to try and make it more appealing to your culture. But most important of all is not to silence the message through not speaking. And some of us are like, yeah, but I don't know what to say, to which I say something rather than nothing. If you're like, I don't even know where to start, that's okay. Just start, just talk about Jesus in the most basic way that you can. Because it's so much better to say something than nothing. Don't be silent. Keep on speaking. Okay, a church can do lots of good things. We can help the poor and care for the environment. We can bless our town and provide a place of refuge for our children. We can challenge injustice and provide community for the isolated. But if amidst all those good things we are silent, okay, if we stop speaking joyfully, winsomely, without being able to help ourselves about Jesus, then friends, we are not doing the one thing, the only thing that Jesus had said will actually grow his kingdom. We've departed from Jesus' way of doing his work. I mean, my goodness me, don't you think this is a message for the discouraged, underconfident, hesitant British church in 2024? Do not be silent, keep on speaking. Remember, it's my work in my way. Finally, under my watch. My work, my way, under my watch. Look at verse 10. This is wonderful, isn't it? For I am with you, and no one is going to attack and harm you, because I have many people in this city. I am with you, and I have many people in this city. Over our summer holidays, we did a lot of driving, and we listened to the entire Chronicles of Narnia. In the car, which is a lot of fun. And I don't know if you've read The Horse and His Boy. It's a lovely story about a boy called Shasta. And Shasta is an orphan. He has an abusive master. A Narnian horse, they're speaking horses. He ends up being kind of linked up with him, and they go off on this amazing adventure towards Narnia. And at the end of the book, Shasta, who has a pretty rough ride through life, and indeed on this journey, lots of little disasters befall him, meets Aslan. He doesn't realise it's Aslan to start with. And for those unfamiliar with Narnia, Aslan is a kind of characterisation of Jesus. That's kind of what C.S. Lewis is trying to help us to see. And there's this lovely little bit when Shasta, the orphan boy, is having a conversation with Aslan. And it says this. Aslan says, "Tell me your sorrows." Shasta was a little reassured by the breath, so he told how he had never known his real father or mother and had been brought up sternly by the fishermen. And then he told the story of his escape and how they were chased by lions and forced to swim for their lives, and of all their dangers in Tashbarnan, about the night among the tombs and how the beasts howled at him out of a desert. And he told about the heat and the thirst of their desert journey and how they were almost at their goal when another lion chased them and wounded avarice, and also how very long it was since he had had anything to eat. "I do not call you unfortunate," said Aslan. "Don't you think it was bad luck to meet so many lions?" said Shasta. "There was only one lion," said Aslan. "What on earth do you mean? I've just told you there were at least two on the first night, and there was only one, but he was swift of foot." "How do you know?" "I was the lion." And as Shasta gaped with open mouth and said nothing, the voice continued, "I was the lion who forced you to join with avarice. I was the cat who comforted you among the houses of the dead. I was the lion who drove the jackals from you while you slept. I was the lion who gave the horses new strength of fear for the last mile so that they should reach King Loon in time. And I was the lion you do not remember who pushed the boat
in which he lay a child near death, so that it came to the shore where a man sat, wakeful at midnight, to receive ye. It's a lovely little passage. And the point that it's making is that half the time we're not even aware of how Jesus is with us. That was Shasta's experience. He went through this whole journey and all these apparent disasters, and yet behind the scenes, Jesus was there working with him, leading him to the goal. When we follow Jesus, when we join his team, we are under his constant watch and provision, often in ways that we don't notice at the time. I mean, for Paul, was it a coincidence that he happened to meet Priscilla and Aquila when he first arrived in Corinth, who, as it happens, had been driven out of Rome by a pogrom? I mean, that was a disaster for them, and yet now they're linked up with Paul and they become key partners in the work. Jesus says, I'm with you. You know, is it a coincidence that Gallio, this proconsul, is utterly indifferent to the charge brought against Paul and so lets him off? Jesus says, it's okay, I'm with you. You see, when we follow Jesus, he says, look, there's work to do. There's a kingdom to build, there's a world to redeem, there's a message to spread, there's work to do. But here's the thing, as a Christian, you never work for Jesus. You only ever work with Jesus. Isn't that amazing? So your little niche where you're seeking to spread seed, he's with you. It's his work, in his way, under his constant watch. Are you discouraged? Okay, have you, if you're honest, checked out with Jesus on some level? Well, friends, can you allow this word from Jesus to speak into your discouragement today? Whatever discouragement you're going through, remember that he has called you to belong to him, and that he's called you to labour with him. His work, his way, under his watch. Well, let's just take a moment to talk to God about this. I'd invite you just to bring your discouragement to him, to say, God, I feel discouraged about this. And then to ask him to speak these words of encouragement to you, that you can pick yourself up and keep going again. Do not be afraid. Keep on speaking. Do not be silent, for I am with you. And no one is going to attack or harm you, because I have many people in this city. Well, a few moments of quiet as we pray to God in our own hearts, and then Yaki is going to come and lead a time of prayer for us.